welcome to AIO Audio News. I'm Michael LeFevre.
I'm Ryan Matlock.
Yeah, Ryan's here. We are doing another reaction in this new format of reactions, which has the editing style a little bit easier on me. Talking about the next Maury Rydell episode, Two's Company, Four's a Crowd, episode 965 of Adventures in Odyssey. What's going on, Ryan? What are we expecting out of this episode?
You know, I don't have much to expect out of this episode, other than that it's a Rydell episode written by Phil, right?
No, it is by Abigail Geiger.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, then, I have higher expectations for this episode.
Well, also, if you want to check out the episode description right here, when Emily Jones is recruited to help solve a mystery, she must face her negative feelings about Suzu and Wit.
Ooh.
Which sounds
last
like
we'd heard she was like about to call Wit and talk about things in the team, right?
I know, so it doesn't make sense. Yeah, things are strange.
I'm curious to hear what the outcome of that phone call was, if it's possible to hear that, if that's a thing.
I don't know. Maybe that'll be the first thing we get in the episode. I don't know. I want to address something that we had mentioned before, or just right before the recording, about these reactions. So the way I'm doing this reaction style is really new for me. I'm not as used to like how frequently I should pause. I want to pause a lot. In fact, the podcast that I listen to a lot, they're known for pausing like every couple seconds, but not to the point where it's like a point that somebody makes is directly countered immediately after that point. It's only like if there's a string of points that happens where I'm like, okay, I want to respond to this and react to this thing that happened, not saying, oh, this is terrible, knowing that it could be changed later, then I will pause. But if it's apparent from the context that, yeah, we should keep it a little bit longer, or we should let the context play out a little bit longer, then I will do that. But I don't want it to be like, if I can pause and I have a point to make, even if I have to cut off something that's going on right now to address a previous point, I might end up doing that. But Ryan's here to help me to make sure I don't pause, not pause too much, but pause in inappropriate places. Do you think that's fair?
If you hear this sound, that's the cattle prod I'll be using on him to electrotherapy train him for how often he should actually be pressing the pause button.
No, it's not how often. It's when. It's depending on the context, Ryan. Let's make this expectations clear, because I don't want to be cattle prodded by that. So.
No, you do want to be cattle prodded.
No.
See?
Oh, why?
Say you do want to be cattle prodded.
Oh, can I just not say anything?
No. Okay. Maybe I won't do the electrotherapy training. I don't know. We'll find out.
Okay. Shall we begin the episode? I have said all that there is to be said. I think if anybody who knows this podcast will know what I would say, so I don't really have to say it again. Do you want to say anything, Ryan?
The best is yet to come. Let's listen to this.
That's the album. Let's do it.
Yay.
Hi, this is Chris. Welcome to Adventures in Odyssey.
Hi, Chris.
Okay, you can't peg me for this one. I'm going to talk about the music. So instantly, the music is very, very different from the team. Something that I noticed about that is because the team doesn't take itself seriously at all, the music is really jokey and kind of high key in that one. The da-da-da-da, that theme all over the place,
yeah.
The peppy music.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah.
This one's very subdued, even more so than like the theme or the intro for The Good in People.
It's another everyday in Odyssey kind of theme. So,
I don't want to think that there are undertones of there's something serious about to happen, but I guess we'll see as the score goes forward. Okay, let's keep going.
Suzu told me something that happened between the two of you.
This is about Suzu?
Well.
Interesting. So if this is a place where I should continue, let me know. I want to avoid your cattle prod.
No, you're good. You're
okay. I think I do want more context. Let's keep going.
Only partially. Suzu's story made me realize that I haven't seen you around Wit's End very much lately. In fact, I don't think you've been in since you called and let me know you decided to be part of the team with Maury.
No! No! What?
What? What?
I'm done.
Well, everyone, if you want to contact Michael, you can comment on AIOAudioNews.com. Let us know what you thought of this episode.
You didn't have to go there. You didn't have to do that. You didn't have to make that be what happened in this episode. We're already, you already failed. That's it.
I will be mailing this cattle prod to Abigail Geiger. You can cut that out. That might be too far.
Yeah. Let's talk about this. This didn't have to happen. This didn't have to be the way this episode starts. There is that it only says, like, this is, I'll even say, this is not the team's fault. The team doesn't conclude with Emily deciding to join the team. It concludes with her saying, before I commit, and you're holding out hope. You said this, Ryan. You had held out hope that her before I commit was, I need to get something cleared up with Wit and explain to him this, why I can't join the team.
Yeah, yeah. I was very hopeful. Like, I had no clue that this was going to start this way. It's very disappointing that it did, because, like, I guess first off, it's disappointing just from a state of, like, narrative cohesion. If you have a episode where a character doesn't want to do something, and then they get someone else talking to them and saying, hey, here's a reason maybe you should do the thing, and they're like, I'm still conflicted, and then the ending is, well, I'll talk to Wit. It sounds like talking to Wit will yield an answer. What's happening here, it sounds like she wasn't
just
calling
called randomly
to get
and said,
an answer. She was calling to give an answer, which isn't how the last episode ended.
No, it was, it does, can we talk? And it's like, yeah, that conversation goes, can we talk? And he goes, oh, about what? She's like, well, I decided to join Maury's team. Well, good for you. Yeah. I'll see you later,
okay,
Mr.
Bye.
Whitaker.
Yeah.
Why?
That's not how that was. So it makes it feel like Phil maybe wrote the team and had grander ideas for how this was going to go. Abigail Geiger wanted to write this episode and was just like, okay, yeah, I'll just take the notes from Phil and kind of fill in. Yeah, she joins the team. Okay, good. Let's get that out of the way so we can get to the rest of the episode, which
here's the thing, Ryan.
I don't mind if the rest of the episode is good, but you know about, I do mind because why?
You've heard about the Rydell realizations, right?
Yes. Well, I know it's going to be a thing.
Well, it's a thing by Phil, three-parter.
Yes.
And you're talking about his grander ideas. If he had those grander ideas, why wouldn't he put his foot down and say, no, I'm going to reveal that in my episode rather than Abigail's? So what would his grander ideas have been? Because I'm confused
by
that.
I didn't know if Phil had, like, what we're actually going to hear the conversation between Emily and Wit.
Okay. You mean he had the team part two, which would have happened in that album, which we would have.
Well, I don't know what Phil was planning. I just know, like, it's Phil's story. When he wrote, hey, Emily gets on the phone, I doubt his thought was that it was this, that she gets on the phone and she goes, hi, Wit, I'm joining the team. Because that's not how he writes it to sound like she's about to have that conversation.
Yeah, I can, like, and, well, here's the
so
thing.
I'm just trying to
the
figure
team,
out why this is here.
Here's the part about Rydell is it's completely broken my sense of what reality should be in Odyssey. So I don't know. Based on everything else in that episode, I can't rule out the possibility that he thought that that would be a realistic conversation. That's the thing. So that might have very well been what he thought it was. And he just...
Part of me feels like this whole Rydell series, it's a case study in why it's important to understand that when you drop hints and when you write things, people have expectations based on social cues. People have, when people listen to a work of art, they're not stupid. They are looking to characters and saying, okay, you said this, that obviously carries meaning. But the problem is that it feels like Phil has written so much of this where characters say things and it carries meaning for the purpose of getting us in suspense and thinking, oh, I can't wait for the next episode. But then he completely drops that thread over and over when we had our interview with him and he was like, oh, well, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Really?
No,
well,
no,
there's
no,
a
no,
lot of
no,
cigars
I'm
on
sorry.
The floor right now.
That is in direct opposition to Chekhov's gun. You can't just say that. I didn't even know about Chekhov's gun. And now I would say, okay, that is bad writing. I am sorry. No,
in
the way you're applying it. Yeah. So, for example, you're telling me that Suzu saying, Mori saying, Japanese is such a beautiful written language. Wish I could read it. Maybe you'll teach me someday, huh? Perhaps when you are ready to learn. Hmm. Yeah, they were just talking about Mori learning Japanese. No, it's not even that people had expectations about that going there.
It's supposed to be mysterious.
No, it's not even, like, even if I didn't find it mysterious, even if I knew where it was going to end up, that scene inherently has those characters talking that way. People don't talk that way if they don't mean anything, unless they're psychopaths, which is what they are in this series. So,
well,
maybe that's actually consistent.
Even then, they have a reason to talk like that. Like, psychopaths aren't just dumb and, like, doing things for no reason. They do it for, like, very specific malicious reason, which, even then, like, this would make sense if Suzu and Mori are both psychopaths, that they might talk to each other like that. But that's not even the issue. The issue is that Phil wants to simultaneously make something seem mysterious, and to a certain extent also the other people who wrote Mori episodes before Rydell Revelations wanted to make this mysterious character that we're like, ooh, who is this character? Oh, are they the next villain? And then Phil wanted to make it not the next villain. I absolutely wonder, like, in the writers' meetings, did they debate and go back and forth, and eventually Phil just kind of won out and he's like, I think we should do it this way, guys.
No, here's what happened. Phil told us what happened. Dave Arnold came up to him randomly one day and he was like, what if it was Suzu? And Phil was like, ooh, that's cool. So Phil and Bob wrote Further From the Truth, in which it's Suzu. And then Phil was like, okay, I've got to write my big three-parter. Wait, it being Suzu doesn't really make sense. Oh, man. Well, I guess I got to explain it away. It totally wasn't a goof. It still makes sense in continuity. So what's happening here is he could just say, yeah, this was a product of us pushing it in this direction and it didn't end up going that way. That is a problem. And if we had known that before, we wouldn't have written it that way. But instead, he was like, yeah, we were originally going to do it, but it still makes perfect sense, guys.
Yeah, no, that's not how a story works.
Nope.
You build a foundation. You don't get to pretend that the foundation still works when you completely change the floor plan after you've built the foundation. Maybe it will if you make the floor plan similar enough to what you initially planned, but
the changing
it constantly doesn't work.
Speaking of changing it constantly, what if the very next line in this episode is Emily saying, well, no, I didn't say that, Whit, and Whit was like, oh, right, I'm just kidding with you.
Let's find out.
All right, shall we continue this?
Sure.
All right.
34 seconds in and Michael's already broken.
Yeah, this is the most disappointing. This is the most disappointing event ever on Adventures in Odyssey. I don't think that's something to say. The reason I'm not as, like, clearly disappointed by it, or maybe I am, is because I'm kind of numb to this whole thing. But this was the last straw. This was the last straw. That's it. And I heard this episode was good. All right, let's keep going.
Let's find out.
Of course, it's okay if you're busy.
No, it's not that.
If you were a mentor and you knew that you had done something, like, does Whit know what he did? Does Whit have any idea that what he did had this effect on Emily and possibly was wrong?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Not as it's been written.
Because I can imagine a scenario in which somebody does something a little off, who is a mentor figure, and then knows that he needs to apologize for it, but, like, doesn't, and that is a problem. That's not a good thing. But then that person meets up with another person later, is like, hey, I haven't seen you in a while. How's it going? And the other guy's like, you did this thing. And the mentor is like, oh, well, yeah, I guess we can talk about that. So maybe if Whit's just trying to deflect here, but it also seems like he's directly leading to the conversation in this conversation. So
sure.
Let's keep going.
One chocolate sundae with extra, extra sprinkles and double chocolate syrup coming up.
Great.
My mom tells me that ice cream solves everything.
Yeah, let's just say I need a lot of ice cream.
Please tell me you caught the reference.
I did. Of course I did. What's,
good.
Yeah, I guess we'll talk about the comparisons later.
Randy?
Yeah. Well, no, I knew it. It's just, with Gilead recently, it's been consistently, wow, this writing isn't great, but not to the extreme degree that these episodes are. So,
Well, I don't know that, like, this episode, you mean?
No, not this one.
Of these Gilead
episodes in the past. The episodes in the past. So, which is why I was like, yeah, I'll wait until once we're done with this episode to actually talk about whether it was good or not. Maybe it's actually good.
Sure.
Something I wanted to mention here is it seems like her kind of relaxing and Whit chuckling there is a sign that she's okay with the vibe, or she's okay with, like, oh, yeah, I guess there's something serious going on. I have a story to tell you. and maybe she's got some underlying feelings still, but I don't get the impression that the reason she came in is because she wants to talk to Wit. Or maybe she knows that it'll eventually be okay and everything's going to be resolved with Wit.
I think the ice cream thing is her avoiding starting the conversation.
Okay, well, let's see.
But I said you could still be a good Christian leader, even if you didn't trust them yet.
Well...
So you didn't demonstrate that you were able to in the team. You let him do something illegal. You demonstrated you're not able to stick to your own morals, Emily. And regardless of whether you are, the bigger question is of obligations here, and I'm assuming Emily's about to address that.
Hopefully.
Someone else I don't trust.
You mean me?
Yes.
Okay, that's good.
Good.
That's...
I'm down with this.
Well, but the thing is, she's already said this. She said this at the end of Let's Call the Whole Thing Off. She says, I don't really trust Mr. Whitaker anymore, and I blame that on you, too.
She doesn't tell Wit, though.
No, she doesn't. So, yeah. I wonder what's going to happen here.
You said you did it because I was special and you knew I could handle it and that it would make me stronger. I understand those kinds of lessons.
This is making my Rydell and Was Maury Right brain fire on all cylinders. This is exactly the conversation we need to be having. I'm just sad that the episode had to start with such a bombshell. Wow.
The way the conversation is coming from here, I don't... Okay, this is going to sound backslidey of me, okay?
Okay, go for it.
I still hold out a little bit of hope because we don't... Like, the fact that this title, the description of the episode says that she's dealing with trust issues with Wit and with Suzu indicates that whatever stuff she did with the team between this episode and the last episode did not go well. And also the fact that she still doesn't trust them... It's not like she joined them and she was like, you're right, everything's hunky-dory. So I'm definitely at least curious to see what went down and like how genuinely she joined them.
Yeah, it's a little confusing. I think what's going on here is that if Emily were being characterized properly, she wouldn't have gone to Maury and Suzu in the team in the first place. So that part is already broken. So once we've established that the broken element of her calling on the Rydells is already here, it makes sense why a future episode would further that premise. So I guess I can't fault this episode for going there. It didn't have to, though. But it makes sense why. Okay, we're 2 minutes in. Let's keep going.
I made it home, and I learned the lesson to check my tires before I go anywhere far.
Sometimes the best way to learn how to swim is to get thrown into the pool.
Right.
Turns out Wit has 5 children, 2 of them drowned in a pool at one point.
Yeah. No, but he knew that water wasn't lethal. See? Okay. I'm going to put the first couple sentences of this episode out of my mind for now. I don't hate this. I like where this is going. Let's see.
I've been praying about it, but I'm still mad at you, and I don't know what to do about it. How's that Sunday coming?
Nearly there.
Emily probably should add to this. It's like, I didn't need to learn that lesson. That wasn't something that... that's not something I... like. And also, you should never have been in a position to teach me that lesson. And what was the lesson? That death happens?
What is it? There is no lesson. There's the father saying, hey, you need to learn the lesson that you need to be careful with your bike. What is the lesson that Emily is supposed to learn here? Like, my lesson, I could take a few lessons away from that. Like, don't get into an escape room when you haven't signed any waivers and you don't know the company running the escape room. And also, apparently, when Wit is vouching for it, because he'll turn it into a lesson against your will.
Yeah, is the lesson not to trust Wit in the first place? Because he okayed
right, like,
this?
That is not a lesson that anyone needs to learn unless Wit's trying to say, yeah, I've been dangerous the whole time. The normal thing that kids have come to expect Wit to do is to ask them, hey, I've got an imagination station adventure. It's understood. You'll probably learn a lesson and some history and some biblical theology. Interested? And they accept the risk when they step into that it might be a bit PG because people get you know, sometimes tortured or whatever in the imagination station. But even then, they know it's going to be an adventure.
Well, I've always had the idea that maybe the imagination station, I think we talked about this recently, like on, I think it was on Odyssey Geek, that the imagination station kind of is, like, somehow doesn't interface with like the brain's fear receptors or something weird where it was like, there's got to be some reason why people aren't scarred by seeing all these things in the station. There, it is somehow an outlier. You can't make that same argument.
I think it's because they're in a dream state. We have plenty of terrifying dreams, but we don't get scarred by them.
Oh, okay. And what's also, I guess you could extrapolate from Aubrey Shepherd in Blackguard's Revenge, that like it does have something to do with sleep, like the fact that they're able to control her like consciousness, level of consciousness in the station. Maybe that's
it.
Okay, I don't know. There are theories, but like, I think your point
sense.
Is
like,
your point
from
is
a lore
really
perspective.
Yeah, and your point is also strong about just even if it didn't work like that, there is consent there. Very clear.
Yeah,
as Phil would say, Emily couldn't give consent in the first place. So you know,
what do you mean?
Well, his argument was, well, does somebody Emily's age even know about consent? Does she even know what that means? Would she be able to consent?
Yes.
And that's not an argument worth having.
We're not talking about the birds and the bees here, Phil. We're talking about asking for permission to do something dangerous to somebody. Yeah. Yes, okay. Yes, a kid knows how to consent to go on a roller coaster.
I don't really have much else to add to this point. It's just there are so many factors here that I don't even think Wit should have used Maury as the vehicle to teach Emily this lesson in the first place. I think it should have just been Wit. This was a case of where Maury did best Wit and where Maury did have control over Wit's end. And we don't even get to explain how Wit knew that it was Maury behind it the whole time. So the point being, if you're going to say that Wit was involved and he didn't stop it, this is the only way to defend it. And it's leading down this trail. So, okay. I want to get back and see what more Emily has to say about this. Can we keep going?
Yeah.
Alrighty.
I know that I explained my reasoning for allowing you to go through it, but I didn't appreciate how much it would hurt you. I was wrong, and I should have involved you in what was going on sooner. I know it won't make up for your feelings, but, well, I'm sorry.
All right. You fixed it. In three lines, you fixed it. You have successfully fixed Rydell. Great job.
Yeah.
I'm not even being sarcastic here. This is the exact scenario that needed to happen forever. Wit said the exact things that he needed to say. Yeah. Yeah, he should have involved Emily. He should have involved her when she asked in the first place and not lied to her. That's implicit here. He didn't appreciate what she went through. He was wrong. Yeah. We got nothing to say. That's it. Great. Took us 3 years to get here, and we're here.
Yay.
All right. Okay. Rydell's over, guys. Finally, after all this time, Wit says,
no. These episodes get shorter and shorter. I thought that it would be like a 20-minute thing, but I guess Odyssey's just releasing 3-minute, 30-second episodes.
Can we just stop here? Can we just call it there? Because I am really, really happy about this.
You can make the edit later where he says, I'm sorry, and then it just goes straight to Adventures in Odyssey is a presentation of Focus on the Family.
I don't think there's much else that's left out here. He said, I gave you my reasoning, but I was wrong. Like, that's it. Full stop. Okay. Yeah. If we go back over the whole series of Was Maury Right and of our reviews of these episodes and all the discussion surrounding it, it came down to that one simple question, was Maury right? Which Wit said he was. To bring out the good in people, eh? Yeah, at the end of part three. And here, he's directly going against that. I feel like this should have happened way sooner, and I don't think Phil ever would have written this. I don't understand how Phil is okay with this being out here. But it happened. All right.
Does Phil get to greenlight?
I don't know. I know he has
a lot of writers.
I know he has a lot of influence, and this was his baby. This was his storyline. But I guess Marshall and Dave were like, we're going to do this instead. And Abby Geiger was able to fix it. Who knew that Abigail Geiger would save Odyssey? Wow. Because that's what's going on here. Okay. Shall we continue?
Please.
Okay.
Where did you hear that?
I don't know. Somewhere. But she has that reputation, right? You were investigating her for a while.
Yeah, I was, but...
See?
How would she know that about Suzu? Nobody knows that about Suzu. Nobody knew...
Lots of people knew that Emily was investigating them because
no.
she was
How?
She asked like several people about Maury's stuff that he was doing, like Olivia.
Asked Matt. Well, yeah, but those are the Parkers. Why would the Parkers spread it to her?
I don't think rumors typically tend to intentionally be spread.
Also, that was Maury, not Suzu. Emily wasn't suspicious of Suzu until minutes
Maury and Suzu have moved into Wit's house, and all the kids know Wit, so it wouldn't surprise me if someone was like, oh, why are they moving in? Oh, I heard because it was because of the escape, like the escape room surely made the rounds.
No, nobody knows who was responsible for the escape room.
But they know what happened, right?
Yeah, but why would they think that Suzu was responsible for that?
I'm not here to make the entire backstory of the rumor lore in Adventures in Odyssey.
I'm saying that somehow this is either an inside job and these people were involved, like, or know the Parkers or know Zoe Grant, or they know, or Suzu's been spreading the information, or the reason that Maury doesn't want to get involved is because Maury is baiting them with this mystery. Maybe Maury's trying to see how good Emily and Suzu are as a detective pair. That's the most likely scenario here, actually. Yeah, I think that's actually it. Yeah, that's it. Maury set up this case and put the hints together to these girls who aren't really good at keeping secrets to show that Emily and Suzu work great together. Like, he showed that his sister works great in the locker mystery, in the key suspect. And he showed that Emily and Matthew work great together. Now it's his turn to show that Emily and Suzu work together. I'm going to peg it. That's my theory for what's going on here.
Okay.
Anyway.
Some detective, huh?
Often it's the people we would least expect that are lonely.
No, I think it's pretty obvious. She doesn't really exhibit characteristics or qualities that would make her a person who people would want to be friends with. Which is also strange because she was in the drama club. Were those not her friends at one point? And what happened to that? Yeah. Does the drama club still exist?
That, and also she made friends with Emily and Matthew back with the the moon mystery.
And also the Suzu told me about the escape room line indicates that they were close enough so that Emily would be like, what? Let's do this escape room together. They seem like friends there. Or they seemed like friends.
Yeah. And this feels a bit retconny.
Yeah. Well, I don't have a problem with saying that since then people have realized who she is and are now rejecting her for it. But
wait, I thought you said no one knew the rumor could
right.
have gotten
so that, around. Right. So that's what's strange about this. So I can't reconcile those two. Anyway. Yeah.
I'm willing to believe that the rumor got around because
that tracks
like,
with
for
what,
Emily yeah. for Emily to be like, oh gosh, I was locked in an escape room and so was Suzu, or like so was Matthew and Suzu was there but she wasn't locked in. People would at least know that event happened, and then when everything came out in Rydell Revelations to Emily and was Matthew involved in that? Did he find out?
No.
So just Emily. And Wit. I don't expect Wit to spread things around. I think Emily would have at least told like a few close friends, like, yeah, this happened. That's why I'm traumatized right now. And I don't know that I would.
Actually, I will backpedal a little bit. Emily floats the theory to Matthew that it's probably Maury and might be Suzu as well. So there is that conversation.
That's
but it
right.
It's not proven,
sure.
though.
Sure. I could see like someone overhearing something and the rumor starting that way.
Okay.
Because a lot of her investigation goes on in school hallways.
Right. Well, that's a trope.
It is.
That happens in Red Rock as well. Like, they're walking through a hallway talking about their what's going on. They overhear the conversation between the two mean girls and stuff. So,
yeah. You know. It's a trope, but it's still also very possible.
And also, Emily, I think this was a one nitpick that I might agree with, but I don't know if it actually is detrimental to Rydell Revelations Part 1. Emily's recording everything on her recorder as she's walking through the school hallway.
Right.
Like, just out loud. It's like, maybe that's what you just brought up. Anyway, okay. Shall we continue?
Mm-hmm.
Was it some kind of prank on Suzu?
I wasn't sure. I just knew I should go back and stop it.
Okay, here's an interesting thing. Let's say it is a prank on Suzu, and Suzu's being humiliated, and Emily sticks up for her. I feel like a demonstration of what unconditional love is, and I love the, like, not unconditionally, but I love the YouTubers who I've been watching on film criticism. But one of them has a thing where he's like, unconditional love is worthless. If there's nothing I can do to not earn your love, well, that's pretty worthless love. And I'm like, you don't get the idea. It's that love saves you from eternal destruction. And there's nothing you can do to not merit that. That's a sense of control that this person who gives you unconditional love has over your life that you don't have. And that's why that unconditional love is so powerful. And that's why here as well, that even though Suzu's done all of this, she doesn't deserve this. If she's being harassed right here, she doesn't deserve that. And so Emily going in and sticking up for her, still being loving towards her, shows that Emily is still exhibiting Christian principles, even while recognizing I still have serious problems with you. So if that's the way this episode goes, I'll be very proud.
Sure. Another thing real quick on unconditional love.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that there aren't consequences for actions or boundaries put in place when someone acts out in a way that they shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, in our relationship with God, we say that God has unconditional love for us. That means that he loves us. He sent his son to die for us. And he doesn't say he's here to die for you, but not for you. Like, that is open to everybody. There are still boundaries set in place so far as that relationship is concerned. Specifically that, hey, this is open to people who believe on the Lord Jesus Christ. It's not unconditional as in it's a bit of a misunderstanding of what love is. If we're saying love is whenever God does something nice, that's a misunderstanding of what love is. The love that he's displaying is that he's made this option available to us. It obviously still comes with it's his terms, but he offers it to everybody. The
right
equivalent in like a human relationship would be like, I would say I have if I was unconditionally loving you, Michael, and
okay.
And so we're friends and we share in these reviews together and I want to serve you as like whenever I can.
Then why don't you do the sound design?
What?
Why don't you do the sound design, Ryan?
Well, see, there's the thing. I can love you. That doesn't mean I will do literally anything for you. Because okay. There's a difference between servitude and just being taken advantage of. Like if you said, hey, Ryan, if you love me, you'll do this for me. I would say, well, no, my love for you, I can serve you, but I'm not going to just do anything because that would just be servitude.
It reminds me going to a friend in the hall last year and saying, hey, are you a real friend or a fake friend? I'd like to think I'm a real friend. Okay, can you shave the back of my neck? What?
No. Okay.
Anecdote. Anyway, continue.
Sure. But no, like, if you... When you set a boundary, for example, like if I say, hey, Michael, I love you and I love you as a brother and want to serve you where I can and such. And you say, OK, well, then edit this episode. I can say, well, I would do that, but I don't have time. That's not me saying I don't love you. It's me saying that's just not a way that I can express my love. It doesn't mean that I have conditions. It yeah. means I have limits.
That kind of ties back into Emily's example of the flat tire back in the beginning of the episode. Just because her father loves her doesn't mean that he can't drop everything to go help her. So he used that example to say, looks like this is a case where you're going to have to learn on your own. But he also didn't set it up in the first place. He used it to like let that happen. So like it's not a demonstration of unconditional love between friends for mm-hmm. me to put you in a scenario where you have to edit your own audio drama and or edit your own like. Or do something that you wouldn't otherwise have to do. That's a breach of trust as well. So,
right.
I think Emily's been consistent on this.
Yeah, and like even God has boundaries when it comes to like the Israelites, for example. That's a better example, is that he makes a covenant with the Israelites in the Old Testament and says, hey, here are all the laws that you need to follow, and here are all the blessings I will lavish upon you if you do. That's not an example of conditional love, though. Him putting those boundaries in place, he doesn't put them in there because he just loves rules and wants to boss them around. He puts them in there because he knows that life will go well for them if they follow those rules. So he's actually loving them by guiding them in the proper direction and setting that boundary, saying like, no, I'm not going to lavish blessings on you when you're doing the wrong thing, because then you'll think you're doing the right thing. and you'll keep doing the wrong thing and your life will get worse. I love you and I don't want your life to get worse. Mm-hmm. So his unconditional love is still framed by boundaries and limits on what people can do within that relationship. That doesn't mean that the love stops, though, when people mess up. It means that he's still there with an open hand saying, hey, how about you stop messing up now?
Right. Okay, let's see if that's the actual point of this episode, because I'll be happy if it is.
Conditional love would be to say, if you make a mistake, I'm not going to continue loving you. I only want to have relationships with people who never mess up in the first place.
Mm-hmm. And we're glad that I'm glad that's not how God works, because we are fallible. Yeah. We are not perfect. We are bad.
Right.
But that means they will all think I'm the thief.
They won't. Once you solve the case for them.
So I just had a thought. I think, like, I'm racking up the things that I like about this episode and the things that I don't, and seeing if there are things that are good or things that aren't good. Something that comes back to me that I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this, was earlier when Emily was laying out the case in pretty clear terms, and Susie was just like, you don't like me, and you're just upset at me. Is that realistic for Susie to have that reaction to Emily pretty calmly laying out the facts of the case?
It could be if Susu has the expectation that Emily just kind of go with and help solve the mystery in the way that Susu wants to. And also Susu is like really interested in the friendship of these girls to the extent that anything that gets in between her and that is a threat. Then at least psychologically, I could definitely see why she would be like, Emily, don't ruin this for me. When Emily starts pushing back and saying, these girls are mysterious, she would say, like, no, Emily, you're getting in between me and this.
Especially because Susu just said, I thought we were friends. Maybe one of these girls, this has happened to me in real life. Maybe one of these girls is, like, trying to pretend to be Susu's friend so she can humiliate her later. Like, ooh.
Yes, that is quite clearly what's going on, especially, like, from the beginning when she's like, Susu! Oh, Emily.
Ryan, I love this episode.
Yay!
I hate the first line, but I don't think that's this episode's fault. I love this episode. Let's keep going.
Behind these books.
I've been wondering where that was, and...
Yeah, this is not your traditional mystery in that the clues are hidden. It's that they are very, very obvious, but why? And once you get the footprints in the front yard and the shoes, that all fits together. This might even be one of the best Jones and Parker, because that's what this is.
Yeah.
Emily, this might be one of the best ones.
Yeah.
It must be
Jones
one of
and Rydell mysteries.
Is it weird if I say I don't hate that? And like, yeah, there still needs to be some talk about this going forward, but like what this team is. But yeah, this writing is great.
Sure.
I love it because it is hard to write a compelling mystery that where. It's where, like, you don't know what the clues are. You don't know what the clues are the whole way through. So by just saying them up front but not giving the motivation, having the motivation be the mystery to solve and having that actually be solvable, I think that's fantastic. Okay.
That is the best way to write a mystery. Like, I was irritated, actually, when they first started doing Jones Parker mysteries because they weren't actually mysteries. Like, the one with Barrett losing his Verminoids game, it's
like
not a mystery.
You stole my Verminoids game!
You stole my Verminoids game! It's just, let's follow breadcrumbs until we get to the one that's actually the proper breadcrumb, but we're going to spend 20 minutes wasting your time with breadcrumbs that are false breadcrumbs while we do it. And then we'll finally get to something that results in the end, but it's like, that wasn't a mystery. That was just me following people for 20 minutes. I don't enjoy that. That's not an enjoyable mystery. Same thing Green Ring Conspiracy. They don't really have a sequence of things where I'm like, oh, I figured it out. The money's at Trickle Lake. TLC doesn't mean anything to me.
I feel like we should talk about Green Ring sometime because I can't really remember what the mystery was even in that, or like what the pieces were. But yeah, you're right. I don't appreciate episodes where I don't know all the facts beforehand. That was my main problem with the writer's ruse, was that those clues are all revealed at the very end. And while you're still processing it, then Emily and Matthew say, this is all fake. And you don't have time to figure out what is even going on to solve it along with them. It just all happens all at once. But here, the episode repeats like several times. This is the clue. This is the clue. This is the clue. Did you understand it yet? Okay, here it is. All right, now that you know what's going to happen, here's what's going to happen. And here's what's going to happen again. And finally, here's the thing that happened. Emily finally did it.
Two's Company, Four's a Crowd, was written by Abigail Geiger and directed by Phil Lawler. Was sound designed by...
No way! Wow! How did you direct this? How?
Maybe he's listening.
And I'm Chris, hoping you'll join us again next time for more Adventures in Odyssey.
Guess what this is, Ryan?
What?
This isn't just a fine episode. This isn't just the fixing of Rydell. This episode is one of my new favorite episodes. I'd put it in my top 25 of all time. This is an excellent story. In the character writing, in bringing out this plot is intrinsically tied to Emily's anger at Suzu. Suzu's, like, if we accept that Suzu is a sociopath, her not apologizing to Emily makes sense. And at least from Wit and Emily's part, they're saved in this episode. I really want to reconcile that initial I joined the team thing. And I think the answer to that is just that was what was set up before. And before I commit is like, yeah, I think that conversation with Wit that happened over the phone, if we had continued from that point, would have been Emily saying that she was wrong. But instead, this episode fixes it by saying, no, nothing happened there. We need to save that for this episode in which Wit says that he's wrong, because that conversation can't just happen over the phone. It's iffy,
sure.
And my initial reaction is still stands. That is my subjective feeling about that. But objectively, it's awesome. Subjectively, I don't know if this is objectively one of the best episodes, but it's one of my favorites at this point. I'll say that. Unless you have any pushback, Ryan.
Oh, a few pushbacks. Just in like a few slight ideological things, I think I agree that this episode does a lot of legwork to rectify a lot of the concerns that fans have had from having Wit apologize and say, hey, look, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have brought you in. I should have been more upfront and honest with you and not kept you in the dark about what was going on. I think that's pleasant. As far as Emily joining the team, it still rubs me the wrong way.
Absolutely.
Simply because she has no, there is no obligation that she be a leader to these two people. You know who has that obligation? Wit.
Wit.
Wit has the obligation to tell them, hey, here is the direction that you should put your efforts. And he even had the opportunity to do so. He apparently knew all about the escape room and let things move forward. Okay, so then that means he knew Suzu and Mori were behind it, right?
Yeah.
I think that's what's being indicated here. And he thought, yeah, I'm going to let them use their skills to possibly put Emily in danger. I'm going to let them use their skills to lie and manipulate people.
Yeah, and he admits here, yes, that was the wrong thing to do, is what he says here in this episode.
Did he say that it was wrong for him to do that? I thought he just said he should have brought Emily in on it sooner.
No, he said he didn't consider what the effect would be on her. Do you want to listen to the clip again?
No, I remember what you're saying. I remember that line. I think the problem with that, so there's a thing with apologies, and that's where if you say,
I'm sorry you felt bad. Oh, okay.
Right. If you say, I'm sorry that I did this to you because it was wrong, that's different from I'm sorry you feel this way.
He says I was wrong.
What?
He says I was wrong in this episode.
And then the reason that he says he was wrong is because he didn't take into consideration how it would affect her.
So what do you expect him to say?
Okay.
That he was wrong.
So I'll give you an example. If I hit someone with a baseball bat and they say, ow, that hurt. You just assaulted me. And I say, oh, I'm very sorry. I didn't realize you would develop a bruise. I'm not actually sorry for assaulting them. I'm sorry for the result. So one is, I'm sorry that an outcome occurred. And the other is, I'm sorry I did an action that was wrong.
Okay.
When you say, I'm sorry I did an action that was wrong, you're taking accountability for the thing you did that was wrong. When you say, I'm sorry this outcome occurred, you are not taking any accountability for causing it. You're simply saying, I regret that that happened. It would be like saying, ah, man, I'm sorry it's raining today. You're not taking any accountability for the fact that it's raining. You're just sorry that it's occurring. There are two things you can say where you say the word sorry, but in one case, you're taking accountability. In the other, you're simply saying this is a regretful situation, isn't it?
Can we listen to the clip again? Like, I think I need to hear it again just to make sure we have context for it. Okay. Let's see where this would be.
I'm sorry, Emily. I truly am. I know that I explained my reasoning for allowing you to go through it, but I didn't appreciate how much it would hurt you. I was wrong, and I should have involved you in what was going on sooner. I know it won't make up for your feelings, but... Well, I'm sorry. Can you forgive me?
Now, let me put it this way. If we go back to the baseball bat example, I whack somebody over the head with a baseball bat, and that person goes, ow, that really hurt me. And I go, I'm so sorry you got hurt. Might I then therefore think that the reason they got hurt was because I did that action?
You might.
And by saying that I was wrong? Yeah.
The difficulty is when the other person says, I don't trust you because I don't know whether you have my best interests at heart. I don't know whether you understand that the problem is your actions. So like if you went back and hit the person again with a baseball bat and you said, oh, I'm sorry you got hurt again. They might start to ask, do you realize that you hitting me with the bat is what's causing that? And I think the difficulty I'm having with the way this apology is phrased, he alludes to her emotions twice. He says, I didn't appreciate how much it would affect you. And the second thing that he says is, I don't know what I can do about your feelings, but I'm sorry. And those two lines seem to be it's a very common thing with people who aren't taking accountability for their actions, for them to point to the emotions of the person who they wronged and say, oh, well, I'm sorry you feel that way about what I did. Will you forgive me? Well, have you actually taken accountability for what you've done? Because we can't move forward until that happens. Because he says, I was wrong. What does he say that he's wrong about? He says, I should have brought you in on this sooner. Well, yeah, that would have helped. But also the issue was letting Maury run your shop the way he did when you knew what was going on. You know what's going on in your own building? You can't stop it?
Oh, yeah, he could have stopped it. Then that's the thing, is that he still encouraged it.
Right. So he doesn't say, because here's the thing. If he knew what was going on and he could have stopped it and he didn't, that makes him complicit. That means that he might as well have just done it.
Yes, he is. That's it. That's the whole thing. That's why Emily's angry here.
So the apology should not be, I didn't know how it would affect you. It should have been, I shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't have made a horror show contraption of an escape room to teach you the lesson about loving loving Matthew as if he was about to die. I shouldn't have done that because it was wrong, not because I didn't know how it would affect you. If he didn't know how something would affect somebody, because that's the thing, is that in the past, the reason we kind of give him a pass on his imagination stuff, or the imagination station stuff, is that people come away from it okay, right? Like, okay, Mr. Barkley can go in.
No, not that they come away from it okay, but that the whole setup is like they're complicit in this, or they're complicit, but they're willing to go through it, and that there's no possibility that anything could go wrong here.
Right.
But
so,
I know what you mean.
Even if Mr. Barkley can be whipped in Egypt and be like, this all feels really real, but also he agreed to go into the imagination station. He understands what it's capable of. And he also understands that it's not real. That's why he asks, like, is this real? It feels real, but I know it's not real. We all understand that this is all a story. It's an adventure. They get through it. They realize that it was worth the ride. And people go back into the imagination station because it's still fun. You wouldn't tell somebody, you wouldn't come out of a VR experience and be all, oh man, I was traumatized because this thing seemed a little bit more real than I'm used to. But, you know, like when you watch a movie, you realize it's a story. When you go into a situation that feels very real because you think it is, that's completely different. And for someone to orchestrate something that's an actual real life event where someone is threatened with death, is very real and very kind of inappropriate. Like that seems very far for what Wit it doesn't do that. Wit doesn't do that typically.
No, correct. So and I'm so, thinking, but yeah, you can finish it up if you want to.
Yeah, but we have that. We have just his. I mean, complete misquoting of scripture when it comes to talking about the parable of the talents and the applicable lesson there. Mm-hmm. But then also just everything that's going on behind the scenes with him seemingly pressuring Emily through Mori and Suzu to join their team when there is no reason that she should join their team. There's no reason that she should spend any time with them until they prove that they understand the gravity of what they did and they're not going to do it again. And yet in their very first episode where they are coming back and saying, hey, Emily, we want to be friends again. They're doing the same kind of things. Suzu is building a robot for manipulation. Mori is hacking a computer illegally. They are doing things they shouldn't be doing. And Emily's not a leader in this. So what's the point? Is the point that we should just, when people do things that are wrong to us, as long as they say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that you would feel that way, we should be okay with that?
I don't think that that's an appropriate
apology. Sorry, go
ahead.
Well,
like if they're able to put two and two together and say, oh, the reason you felt that way was because I did this.
Right. And so that's where I'm still not entirely certain from what Wit says that he understands what he shouldn't have done. Like the escape room thing never should have happened, not under his watch. And he spends the entire time, he's like talking to the mysterious voice and he's like, what's your game? And it sounds like he actually has no clue who this is and thinks that there's
in the original
a concern
writing,
here.
He doesn't. Yeah, as far as I know, in the original episode by Bob Hoos, right. he doesn't. And the reason again, it's genuine is all, because it was, yeah,
this is all retconning stuff that was not meant to be the way it is. And that's why this feels
this episode,
so weird. Like, at this
and
point,
now this episode
I don't
retcons
even,
the retcons.
Yeah, at this point, I don't even want to try to defend, oh, well, Wit should have apologized. Like, I'm just done. I don't regard Rydell with any respect as a series.
Yeah.
Novacom, yeah. Blackard, even like the Eugene arc, all arcs that exist other than Rydell, I can respect because there is consistency in the narrative that was being told. To a certain extent, I think Odyssey ought to plan these things much, much more in advance.
Of course. Do a thing, of course.
Do a beat sheet. Figure out, we're going to do a series. We want to teach this lesson in the end. So here are the steps that we are going to take to get there. We might change a few characters, who does what, but eventually this is what this story is going to tell. And we can back that up biblically.
And
say
we
that.
proved that even without planning it out in advance, you can still tell a compelling story from it. We wrote alternate Rydell. That's
the
that's
difficulty,
take,
though. Yeah. Even with alternate Rydell, it's us trying to piece together a ton of stuff that still doesn't necessarily narratively make sense together. And eventually, it does. I think some of the weaknesses of Rydell is that we're trying to do so much patchwork that a consistent story isn't like the story can't just be told. Like we have to constantly go back and be like, oh, and suddenly this character exists. And that's the reason that this happened. And over here, this character, oh, see, remember this thing? Now that makes sense. And it's like here we can look at this episode and we say, oh, this entire episode makes sense because we get all the clues at the beginning, but we don't get the motives. And then we can try to piece together the motives. And then at the end, it's satisfying because we attributed understandable motives to the actions that were being taken. And we can come along and solve this mystery along with the people who are writing the episode. And it's pleasant. We enjoy it. That's the problem with Rydell, though. There are so many writers with so many different views and agendas and takes on this, and even just like every time I think about this, I think about the BTV Unity or like the BTV behind the scenes episode and that line where Bernard is like, what is this episode about? Unity. And it that is how this feels, is like they did not have any unity when doing these episodes, and on top of that, they didn't have a consistent idea of what they were doing. They changed it midway through the story, and they wonder, or specifically Phil wonders, why audiences are left thinking, what? I thought it was going in this direction. No, 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 no. It's always been going in this. No, it hasn't. It hasn't always been going in this direction. We are left with this difficulty where I can't argue against Wit and be like, how could he have done this? Because he didn't do it. Time changed. Something in the timeline, we jumped to another multiverse where Wit just acted completely differently and had completely different motives. And it makes no sense. And I don't enjoy arguing
against. Of course. No, right, right. And we spent hours upon hours talking about, like, it's been a journey of going from subjectivity to objectivity on this. And it's to the point of where anybody, I mean, even people who were originally more positive on Rydell have come around and been like, yeah, this thing isn't good. My question here is, will you concede that this episode is a step in the right direction? Does it do?
Oh, absolutely. They definitely take their strides to actually apologize, and they take the time to, at least as far as Suzu is concerned, they tell a mostly compelling story. Like, I like the, Suzu's on the receiving end of people treating her poorly, and now Emily has to decide, okay, am I going to be vindictive on this? And while I wouldn't say, yeah, Emily, you have to go and spend all the time with Suzu now that you're on the other side of the escape room, you have to spend time with her and be a leader. I wouldn't say that. I would say, if you feel like not helping her because you want to hurt her, don't do that. Do the opposite of that. Be the better person and help her when you see that you can. That's a loving thing to do. That's blessing your enemies instead of cursing them. And that's where I would praise Emily for the action she took. She feels guilty because she initially didn't want to do it. I think that's a natural initial response. And the fact that she initially responded that way and then said, no, I'm going to go with my conscience here and do the right thing. She did nothing wrong. She did exactly what she should have done. The initial temptation is not a sin.
Right.
The sin would be if she followed through and didn't go to help Suzu. So she does the right thing again when it comes to Suzu. And yet the episode, like at the end, it's like, oh, Suzu made a friend. That's the good thing in this episode. And I'm kind of like,
okay.
Suzu should get to make a friend when she gets to, Suzu should make a friend when she actually starts doing the right thing and not stealing from people. She's not stealing from people in this episode, but she doesn't do anything morally upright either.
Well, and I don't even have a big problem. Like the kleptomania, I think that whole thing isn't my problem with Suzu. My problem with Suzu is the manipulation and is the escape room. Suzu is the mastermind behind the escape room, not Mori. Let's remember that in this retcon. So that's the big thing here. That is what she needs to apologize for even more than, and if I'm going to be consistent on the, her saying, I'm sorry in Let's Call the Whole Thing Off. If I'm going to say that isn't sufficient there, I have to agree with you that yes, this episode needed one more line where Wit says, I shouldn't have done it in the first place. My methods were wrong.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. And it's the thing where if I were to call up Dave Arnold or Abigail Geiger, which I actually can do, and be like, hey, was this your intention in this episode? Because I think it still needs to go one step further. I think that's a possibility to add in that one line. Like, it's improbable, but I'm willing to think that maybe that was the intention, and maybe this was just something that slipped through the cracks with the writing. It's like they wanted to make it so that they closed up all of the things that Wit had done wrong to Emily, and they made this apology. And in doing so, they were like, okay, well, this is going to satisfy the fans. And I'm like, okay, I can see that. I see that intention. I also see, symbolically, Phil Lawler standing over this production and directing this production and going, okay, you have to have the team survive because I have them in a future episode. You have to have Wit's methods. You have to have the things that he does still be intact. And he still is willing to do that. But you can do whatever else you want. And so Abigail Geiger and whoever else, I'm assuming there's more team input on this episode, they're like, okay, well, what do we do? Well, we can't explicitly have Wit apologize for that, but we can have him apologize for everything else. Let's do it. And maybe that's not it. Maybe it was just they missed it. I don't think this episode is reinforcing, or maybe maybe it was in the episode and Phil removed it from the script when he was directing. Who knows? And I also, yes, I would like it to see I would like to see it go a little bit further. Hey, if the IC producers are listening to this, hello. I know you listen to things every now and then, and you know how vocal I have been about Rydell. And if there's any chance to change this, please do. Please add in just one more line where Whit says that. And I think if he says that, like, Ryan, would you agree that would solve the issue? If Whit said, my methods were wrong? Like, this four words?
It would be an appropriate apology for him to just say, look, I shouldn't have done this. And yeah. I think the reason this is so difficult is that we as the fans, at least all the fans that you've interviewed and asked, like, was Maury right? And they've been like, no, what are you talking about? Everybody here knows that this isn't Whit. This is Phil. This isn't how Whit would respond to anything. This isn't how he's ever responded to anything.
Which is why it's so funny that you've got Revelations in which Whit, which the big bad happens. Then Bob Hoos comes along. He's like, I just want to write a mystery. And then Phil comes back. He's like, no, we're continuing this in the team. And then we got Phil again in Value in the Process where it's not addressed. And then this one, Abigail Geiger comes in. Is like, wait, I can actually affect things. I can actually change things. And then I'm assuming in Realizations, we're just going to go back to the same thing.
Probably. And
because I wonder what the Rydell realizations, like, were that maybe Whit doubles down on
his
methods.
I can hold out hope, maybe. I don't know.
No,
we'll
I'm not holding out
the energy.
I'm not holding out hope. I know Realizations is, like, it's a three-parter written by Phil. And we know his perspective. He's not going to back down on this. Realizations is going to, I'm assuming Realizations is going to bring us back to where we were in Revelations. That is not going to be a surprise. I am expecting that fully. Which is why
unless the Rydells realize they were wrong all along, because Odyssey is tired of listening to us talk about this.
I hope, but the only thing I have is there is a good end to this. The good ending here is where you say, like, I'm okay if Maury and Suzu fade into oblivion. They don't have to apologize for Suzu. That's on their characters. They're already destroyed as characters. It's only if you want to redeem their characters that you need to make them apologize. What needs to happen here? And I'm serious about this. If Realizations reverts at all, those episodes need to be cut. They can't be, I don't know if they can be saved. I don't know if they can be edited. They need to be cut. And this episode needs to have one additional line where Whit says, my methods were wrong. And that will clarify that that's what he means when he's apologizing to Emily. Cut Realizations, include that line. I get it. That is impossible. But that is the win condition for this to be saved. Like, you've saved it. As far as I'm concerned, you've saved it. As far as Ryan's concerned, you might have, like, it's a little iffy on that. But if this is canon, this is canon, this has to be canon, it's episode number 965 produced, this is the universe we're in. We're back in the real world. And that is a huge, huge step from where we were even last episode, Value in the Process, even with the team. It's a giant, gargantuan, one might say, step. So, because of that, I don't want it to be in vain. I want this to be as significant as it seems like it. And if you guys, if the Odyssey team continues, if Phil makes that next episode and reverts it, I don't know what to say other than what I've already said already. We're going to go right back into the, we exist in a post-Revelations world, but now we live in a post Two's Company, Four's a Crowd world. And this is going to be for the next 6 months, we have this reprieve. I am very, very happy about this. I know it won't last. And that's pretty much everything I have to say about this. Well, any closing thoughts, Ryan?
I guess I enjoyed the episode. Good episode. Like,
yes.
I can get into the minutiae of, like, ideologies and what's right for
and
a character
I
do
can
versus
too.
What's
yeah.
not. But I've already done that. If I want to just say, like, how is the mystery? How is the general plot? Good plot. Enjoyed it.
Yes.
Good,
yes.
Good characters. Good. Some good humor here and there. As far as my thoughts on, like, I would almost go a step further, like, as far as you saying what needs to be done to fix Rydell, like, I think the negative state of Rydell is due to the massive breaching of canon when they retconned everything. So, like, I would almost go a step further and say, like, I think Rydell Revelations maybe just needs to not be canon.
Yeah, it's to the point
they've
where
they've done this
can't.
In the past, where they produce something and they realize it's bad, and they make it a lost episode.
Yeah, so the it would just have to be you decanonize all of Rydell. And the fun thing
Not
here,
even all of Rydell. They can decanonize, like, part of Rydell, just after Rydell Revelations. Everything prior to that, I'm sure it was leading to a better mystery where Mori actually is the bad guy.
So are you saying...
is treated as such.
So what do? Do they just not produce the follow-up to A Sacrificial Escape, or what?
No, they would produce a new one.
Okay, so you're basically saying produce alternate, or something like alternate, right?
Produce alternate, something like... I understand the focus team is busy, and probably has stories they would rather tell than Rydell, moving forward, because it sounds like we're kind of wrapping it up, and like we've been dealing with Rydell for so long.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear about it anymore. And
no,
I do want to just hear other stories. And like, I don't mean this to say like, focus, do this now. What I am saying is just, like, this is just not a great story. And I don't want them to fix it. I want them to just move on.
I have that concern about Realizations. That's why I was like, you need to cut those episodes. They should not be produced. But I didn't say that about this one because this episode needed to happen. Because the previous episodes are still canon. This episode has to exist. Possibly an even better version of this episode has to exist. But I'm not saying
I have a little bit of hope because Phil Lawler directed this. So maybe he is also maybe he will take whatever grace he had when he directed this and translate that into his writing for the next series. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, anyway, what did you all think about this? If you have any thoughts on this episode or on our general takes on Rydell, or if you're new to this and you're like, what's wrong with Rydell? Why are they complaining about it? Please let me know. I'd love to talk about it. Or you can go listen to the backlog if you want on AIO Audio News. You can go to AIOAudioNews.com to leave a comment. So, for now, Ryan, thank you so much for coming on for this episode. I know this isn't like Return to Gilly, where we're both hosts, and so there was no obligation for you to be here, but I appreciate you sharing your thoughts, and thank you for all you do for the Odyssey fan community and what you've done for this podcast. It's been monumental. So, thank you, Ryan.
Thank you.
And in the meantime, you're listening to AIO Audio News.